Good afternoon, may it please the court. My name is Rachel Funes, attorney regulation number 41716, and I represent Ms. Trujillo. I'd like to focus my argument today on issue one in the opening brief, whether the victim's testimony was inadmissible character evidence. If you have any questions about the facts or issue two, please let me know. I also plan to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Under the rules of evidence, all relevant evidence is admissible unless otherwise provided by the rules. Therefore, even if evidence is relevant, it is still inadmissible under Rule 404A if it is character evidence offered to prove that the victim acted in conformity with her character on a particular occasion. Here, the alleged victim testified that Ms. Trujillo stole her debit card and some cash from her locker. Ms. Trujillo's defense was that Ms. Grant, the victim, had given her permission to use the debit card. To rebut this defense, the victim testified that she never loaned her card to anyone. The victim's testimony that she never loaned her card to anyone was inadmissible character evidence. It was evidence offered to prove that she had a generally careful, she was generally careful and cautious or guarded with her credit card. And it was offered to prove that she acted in conformity with her character on this particular occasion by not giving her debit card to Ms. Trujillo.
Ms. Funes, I would like you to address for me, because I am having difficulty trying to understand the scope of character evidence. Does it just apply to a trait, as you're saying, careful, cautious, or does it also apply to actions? Because I know there's some discussion about habit, too, that has to do with actions. So could you address the distinction between behavior and trait for me?
Sure. In general, character evidence relates to general character traits, sweeping generalizations, things like a character for peacefulness, a character for cautiousness, a character for violence. However, in the Federal Evidence Treatise, which is cited in both the answer brief and the reply brief, it talks about how general laymen don't necessarily use the right terms to describe character. So they're not necessarily going to use a general sweeping term like cautious or guarded. They're going to use ordinary conventions of language, which include things like saying never. You know, for example, they gave an example in that treatise that a witness might offer proof that a defendant is peaceful in character by saying he never hurts anybody or he never picks fights with anyone. So even though those are descriptions of behavior, because they're broad and sweeping, they refer to someone's character. Does that answer your question?
Yes, that's great.
So in this case, again, similar to the never hurts anyone or never picks fights testimony, the testimony was she never loans her card to anyone. And that because it was a sweeping generalization, it referred to her character for cautiousness versus habit, which would be more specific. And the treatises, again, talk about how habit has to be a repeated specific response to a similar situation each time. So an example that's often given is every time you get in your car, you put your seatbelt on. Or every time you leave the house, you turn the lights off. It's something that you do reflexively without thinking. And it has to be a sufficient, there has to be a sufficient number of examples for it to be habit evidence. For example, I cited the case Reyes in the opening brief, and they said 4 instances over 3.5 years was not sufficient to establish a habit. It has to be something that is a repeated response to a specific similar situation each time. And in this case, for example, the situation was not similar because the examples, well, in general, the victim's testimony was just a general sweeping statement, I never loaned my card to anyone. So that doesn't really give you any information about a specific situation and her repeated response to that.
Sorry to interrupt, but sure. I have a question. Was there an objection to this?
No, Your Honor. There was not an objection to this testimony. We're in plain error here.
Okay. Could you explain how this would be obvious error?
Yeah, I can. Thank you. So the rules governing character evidence and habit evidence are long established. The cases cited in the opening brief have been around for a long time. TR in particular, I think, was decided in 1993. In addition, in this particular case, this specific issue was raised in regards to the niece's testimony prior to trial. So the issue was given, was before the judge. The judge was aware of the issue, and the niece, her proposed testimony was almost identical to the testimony given by the victim. The state wanted to call her to testify that her aunt would never loan her debit card to anyone. And the defense objected in motion limine prior to trial. On the first morning of trial, actually, and argued that it was character evidence, cited People v. TR, The state argued no, it's habit evidence, and cited Blackus. So at this time, you know, not only is it a long-established rule of law, but it's also been brought before the judge in a similar context, and the judge is aware of the issue. So I think that does make it obvious. In terms of whether it requires reversal under plain error, there has to be a reasonable possibility that it contributed to Mr. Trujillo's conviction. And I think in this case, there is that reasonable possibility. Ms. Trujillo and Ms. Grant both had similar testimony in some regards. They both talked about how they had a similar interest in baseball. They both talked about how they were friendly with each other. Ms. Grant remembered that Ms. Trujillo had invited her to her son's baseball tournament. And where the testimony converged was that Ms. Grant did not remember, you know, talking about, oh, basically Ms. Trujillo testified that once she found out she couldn't take Ms. Grant to the tournament, Ms. Grant instead offered to provide food for the team. And Ms. Grant did not remember that and said she didn't think she did that because she never loaned her car to anyone. And I think notably, the prosecutor asked her, do you think it's possible that you're mistaken? Do you think you did loan it to her and you just forgot? And her testimony was not, no, I absolutely remember this. That did not happen. Her testimony, her response was, I don't know why I would do that. I never gave it to my niece or my grandson or my grandson's friend. I never loaned my car to anyone. So this character evidence was offered by the state to fill a gap in the state's evidence in terms of the victim's memory.
Well, excuse me, counsel, but I'm reading the exchange between the prosecutor and the victim, and it's a series of questions where the prosecutor is asking the victim, did you give defendant your debit card? The victim says no, and then the victim adds, nobody uses my debit card. And then the next question is, did you ask defendant to buy you t-shirts with your debit card? She says no. And then she says, I never gave my card to anybody. It looks like the victim is sort of adding this on. It doesn't sound like that's something that the prosecutor is trying to elicit from her.
She did multiple times testify that she never loaned her card to anyone without the prosecutor specifically eliciting that information. Since, you know, we're talking about plain error here, my argument is that the court should have recognized that that was inadmissible character evidence, stopped the testimony, instructed the jury to disregard that, and then told the prosecutor to inform the witness that she can't testify about her character for consciousness.
Well, help me understand that then. part of the definition of plain error is it's got to be so obvious that a judge would do something about it without the benefit of an objection. Now, isn't this a situation where it would be incumbent upon trial counsel to do something about it, and if, especially since there's been some sort of a discussion about it in limine, couldn't the trial court judges have concluded that it was some sort of a tactic on the part of the defendant to allow this to come in?
I don't think that the judge would have concluded that it was a tactic. We pretty clearly argued prior to trial that we did not want the niece to give the same exact testimony.
Well, then why didn't counsel object to it?
I can't explain that. I think it was an oversight on counsel's part.
And can you help elucidate for me, in the pretrial conference when they're discussing the testimony, was the objection to terms like cautious or careful, or was the objection to the actions of not lending out the card? You know, how did that conversation go?
My recollection is that the niece's proposed testimony was that her aunt never loans her card to anyone. And we objected and argued that that was character evidence because it related to her character for cautiousness with her card.
Okay.
Just sort of in conclusion regarding the prejudice of this, I cited Mickelson v. United States. It's a United States Supreme Court case, and it talks about how character evidence is highly persuasive. The jury tends to overvalue character evidence. And in addition, McCormick on evidence talks about how it's unreliable. You don't always invariably act in conformity with your character. And that's in contrast to habit evidence. The reason habit evidence is admissible is because you do invariably put on that seatbelt when you get in the car without thinking. In contrast, character evidence relates to something that you have to think about. You have to make a decision each time. And so there's not this sort of invariable response and absolute conformity with your character. And for that reason, I think that it was extremely prejudicial and would have weighed heavily with the jury in deciding whether the victim's testimony was credible and whether her memory was accurate, and whether, if it was not accurate, you know, regardless of whether she remembered loaning the card out, whether she would have done that. And I think the jury would have taken that into account. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
You have 5 minutes and 16 seconds.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Jacob Lofgren, and I represent the people in this matter. My registration number is 40904. The people request that this court affirm the judgment of the district court because the victim's statements that she would never lend her debit card to anyone were generally relevant and therefore admissible at trial. In this case, the defendant stole the victim's debit card and used it to purchase $270 in goods. At trial, the defendant claimed that she stole that debit card, or she took that debit card with the victim's permission in order to purchase items for her son's baseball tournament. The victim consistently testified she never lent her debit card to the defendant and never lent it to anyone else. The defendant complains that this was plain error, that allowing these statements in a trial was plain error because the victim should not have been permitted to say that she never lent her debit card to anyone. There were no objections at trial to this testimony. And while there was a pretrial discussion of whether this should be allowed in through the niece's testimony, that pretrial discussion was never fully resolved by the district court. In fact, the district court held any ruling in abeyance and asked counsel to raise an objection at trial at the time this testimony was admitted if they still believed it was improper. No objection of that nature was ever raised at any time when any of these statements were made. In addition to saying that she never lent her debit card to anyone, the victim specifically said that instead her standard practice would be to have her personal shopper take her to the bank so that she could withdraw cash and she could provide that personal shopper with that cash to use to buy her items. That type of evidence was generally admissible under CREs 401 and 403. For evidence to be admissible under CRE 401, it simply had to be probative of some issue at trial. Here, the central issue at trial was, did the victim lend her debit card to the defendant, or did the defendant steal that debit card? The victim's testimony that she never lent her debit card to anyone, including the defendant, was particularly relevant to that central question. It answered the question. The victim would never lend her debit card to anyone, so she certainly didn't lend it to the defendant on this occasion.
Mr. Lofgren, let me just ask you to take one step further, because I don't think the parties are disputing whether the evidence is relevant under 401. So can you jump to character evidence and habit evidence and take it from there?
I can do that. Under CRE 406, this was certainly habit evidence. Habit evidence, as Your Honor asked earlier, is the distinction between a trait and a behavior. Here, the victim was testifying to a behavior. She was saying, when I am confronted with a situation where I need something purchased, my standard behavior is to go to the bank, get cash, and provide that to my personal shopper. I would never lend my debit card to someone and tell them to use it. Therefore, her standard behavior was to go to the bank and withdraw that cash. And that is why the evidence that she would never lend her debit card to anyone and instead would follow that standard behavior comes in under CRE 406 as habit. Habit is defined by McCormick on evidence as one's regular response to a repeated situation or regular practice of responding to a particular kind of situation with a specific type of conduct. Here, that regular response, that repeated reaction, was to go to the bank, get the cash, and provide it to the personal shopper, not give the debit card out. That type of habit evidence certainly could come in, was relevant, and was not in any way prejudicial to the defendant.
Could you address with habit evidence, because I know some of the authorities talk about a repeated response and others talk about semi-automatic response, and so can you address that distinction?
I'm not sure there is much of a distinction between the two. A regular response and a semi-automatic response are more or less the same thing. If you get in your car and you always put on your seatbelt, that's semi-automatic, that's regular response. From my view, and if you look at the way it's discussed in TR, it appears that those two situations are the exact same thing. There isn't much of a distinction. And most of the treatises that address this don't make much of a distinction between semi-automatic and regular practice either. Alternatively, this evidence could have come in under CRE 404A2. And that is because the defendant at trial specifically put the victim's character in issue. While the character distinction here might be a little bit blurry in that, is this actually a trait of the victim? It certainly was. The traits here were identified by defense counsel: careful, cautious, and guarded. The defense counsel at trial specifically attacked those three traits, in his opening statement and in his cross-examination of the victim. He made her out to have a faulty memory, suggested that she would have lent her debit card, suggesting she was not cautious with it and she was not careful with it, and that the evidence that she would never lend her debit card to anyone was specifically contradicts the defendant's inference that there was some issue with the victim's character, her carefulness, her guardedness, and her ability to keep close track of her debit card. So even if this did not constitute habit evidence under CRE 406, it was still admissible under CRE 404A2 to rebut that inference that the defendant somehow, or that the victim was somehow not careful with her debit card. In any event, there was certainly no plain error in this case. First, because there's very little authority that would guide the district court in understanding the limits and bounds of habit evidence. As it appears both parties can recognize, there's only one more or less case in Colorado that even directly addresses what constitutes habit evidence, and even there it only constitutes one paragraph in that opinion. So the district court here had very little guidance and very little to suggest that it needed to sua sponte intervene to prevent statements that the victim would never lend her debit card when those were not clearly improper habit evidence under any existing case law.
Excuse me, counsel, I don't recall anybody arguing that this was habit evidence either pre-trial or at trial. Is that true?
No, that's not true. When they did have the discussion of whether this testimony could come in through the niece, defense counsel argued this was improper character evidence. The prosecution specifically argued, no, this is habit evidence, and that it should come in through the niece or through any other witness because it's evidence of habit. So there was that discussion pre-trial. In any event, there was overwhelming evidence, or at least substantial evidence, of the defendant's guilt in this case. The uses that the defendant used the victim's debit card for were entirely inconsistent with her version of events. The defendant suggested the victim provided this debit card and said, go and buy some groceries to help make lunch for your son's baseball team. But instead, the defendant used this to purchase 4 extra large t-shirts that were not baseball souvenirs in any capacity and had sayings that were very clearly inconsistent with being baseball souvenirs. More importantly, when she took the debit card to the grocery store, she ran a test purchase. She bought a newspaper for $1.50 and less than 5 minutes later ran a $250 grocery order. This was shown through surveillance video to the jury, and an employee of the King Supers where the defendant used the debit card said, this type of action is consistent with what people do when they steal debit cards. They run a test transaction for a very small amount to see if the card is going to work, and then they run their larger order. That's exactly what the defendant did here, and that is inconsistent with her belief that she had the authority to use this debit card. If she believes she had that authority, why the two separate transactions? For that reason, no reasonable jury viewing this evidence could have concluded that the defendant's version of events was believable or plausible. Instead, the victim's version, that she never gave the defendant authority to use her card because she would never give anyone authority to use her debit card, was more plausible, and the jury rightly returned a guilty verdict. For that reason, if there are no further questions, I would ask this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
So I'd like to start just by pointing out that under Rule 402, even if evidence is relevant, it still has to comply with the other rules of evidence. In terms of the Attorney General's argument that this was a habit because it was her standard behavior to go to the bank and get cash, that example is actually precisely why this doesn't fall under habit evidence. The treatises and the cases explain that habit evidence has to be a repeated specific response in a similar situation each time. And here, the situations that Ms. Grant cited previously were when she was living with her grandson and she had easy access to the bank. She could go to the bank herself. Her grandson could take her to the bank to get cash. In contrast, in this situation, she's living in an assisted living facility. The evidence was pretty clear that she would not be able to go to the bank unless she waited to take the shuttle or had a family member come and pick her up and take her to the bank. And she She was not able to get Ms. Trujillo, who she wanted to give the money to take her to the bank. So it's a different kind of situation, which is another reason it's not a habit in this case. And I cited Simplex in the opening brief, but it talks about how habit is a specific conduct capable of almost identical repetition. This is not the kind of situation where your conduct is capable of almost identical repetition. Each time somebody asks you if you will loan the money, you have to think about it. You have to think about the person that's asking you for the money. You have to think about how much money they're asking for, whether you trust the person. So it's not something that's going to be capable of identical repetition. It's going to be different in each circumstance. In addition, the state argues that this was admissible under 404A2 because we put her character at issue. Contrary to the state's argument, presenting a defense to the charges does not put a person of the victim's character at issue. And I cited People v. TR in the opening brief. I think that's on point because in that case, the victim was hit in a car accident. The defendant was charged with, I believe, reckless homicide. And the defense was that the victim had caused the accident because she didn't look to the left and yield to the oncoming traffic before entering the intersection. And in that case, the court held that the evidence that she was a cautious driver was not admissible. That was her character. That was the character evidence that was admitted. And they said that was not admissible, even though that would have directly rebutted the defense that she had not been cautious in entering the intersection without looking. In addition, in People v. Jones, that was a self-defense case, and I don't have that cited in the opening brief, so I'll give you the cite. It's 743 P2D 44, page number 46, and it's a Colorado Court of Appeals case from 1987. In that case, again, it was a self-defense case, and the defendant claimed that the victim had attacked him. And the court... the victim gave some testimony, character testimony, about how he never picked fights, he never fought with anyone. And the court held that that was inadmissible character evidence because the defendant had not brought his character at issue by claiming that it was self-defense and that he had been attacked first. And they specifically said that it was specific actions on a specific occasion. He didn't claim that the victim was a generally violent person or generally picked fights with anyone. He was just claiming on this specific occasion he picked a fight with me. And in that situation, character evidence was not admissible in rebuttal. And similarly here, our defense was that on this specific occasion, Ms. Grant loaned me her debit card so that I could use it. We didn't argue that she was generally careless with her debit card, that she was always giving out money to everyone, or that she lent her debit card to lots of people. We just claimed that on this specific occasion, that was what happened. And therefore, that did not bring her character into evidence. That was just presenting a defense. I also wanted to respond briefly to the state's argument that her purchases were inconsistent. I disagree with that. I think that the defendant in this case explained what her purchases were. The majority of the purchases were sandwich items, desserts, foods that you could feed to a baseball team. She had purchased oil the night before. I believe she purchased the oil the night before. So I think that rebuts the state's argument that this newspaper purchase was somehow testing out the debit card. She testified that the oil was so that she could make burritos for the team. And then she explained that the reason she had to move after checking out the newspaper was because someone had told her that she couldn't do self-checkout with more than 15 items. So she had to stop her purchase and move to a different checkout lane. I'm almost out of time, so if you don't have any remaining questions, I just ask that you reverse Ms. Trujillo's conviction. Thank you.
Mr. Lofgren, do you want a few days to respond to the Jones opinion that counsel just discussed?
Please, Your
Honor. About a week. All right. Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and the written opinion will issue in due course. The court.